how many people are we going to have sharing space with how many bears, and how is that all going to shake out in a way that bears aren't at risk and people aren't at risk?
Scientists examine how drilling in Anwar would affect local animals. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, February 8th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, lawmakers disagree about how to fund school budgets.
I would say it's the right move, the right time, and the wrong funding source.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
If you were surprised when EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt took a left turn on the proposed Pebble Mine last month, you're not alone. Senator Lisa Murkowski was too. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin caught up with the senator at the Capitol recently and asked her what she thought of Pruitt's decision to keep alive a proposal from the Obama administration to protect the headwaters of Bristol Bay, a proposal Murkowski and other Republicans had complained was egregious federal overreach.
Murkowski says she got the news from Pruitt just before the public announcement.
I think I was just generally surprised. And I think part of it is because the administrator has typically taken an approach that less regulation, because that's
Murkowski chose her words carefully.
He has been more favorably inclined to find paths forward where there have been regulatory impediments placed.
Murkowski has not taken a position for or against the mine, but she was highly critical when President Obama's EPA proposed restrictions on Pebble, prohibiting it from damaging more than 5 miles of fish streams, among other limits. Murkowski called that a preemptive veto. Pebble had not yet applied for its permits. Murkowski says what the Trump administration has done is different.
The action that they took does not halt Pebble's application. It says that they may continue through that process. That's the difference.
But Obama's EPA administrator said her action wasn't blocking Pebble's application either. Here's then-Administrator Gina McCarthy in 2014.
If the company is ready for the permit application, they're still free to submit that, and we'd encourage that.
Pebble did not file its application until late last year. Murkowski says Administrator Pruitt wants a credible process and has set a high bar for Pebble to meet. Reporting from the Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
When the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge opens to drilling, this largely untouched land could have new visitors as oil and gas exploration gets underway. So what does that mean for the animals who already live there? A new federal report doesn't answer that question, but it does provide some context for what to expect. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
When Congress passed the Republican tax overhaul bill in late December, Todd Atwood didn't realize opening Anwar was part of the package deal. He's a polar bear biologist with the United States Geological Survey. And while he says the speed of the decision was unexpected,
From a science perspective, we're not caught off guard by this. This is stuff we've been thinking about for a while.
By stuff, Atwood is referring to the place where humans and polar bears meet. He says, historically, Beaufort Sea bears would den in the winter on ice. That was the case 15 years ago when his agency put together a report on animals living in Anwar. But an update to that report suggests that larger numbers of polar bears are denning on land. Also, the bears are coming ashore to scavenge for food as the quality of sea ice diminishes. Atwood says it's like two worlds more frequently coming together.
People and polar bears in the same place, and then, you know, a big pile of tasty bowhead whale scraps to attract the bears and keep them, you know, keep them focused on that area.
Now, add to that the industrial activity we could expect in a newly opened ANWR. Roads would have to be built, down the line, platforms for oil rigs. Atwood says there are some uncertainties.
How many people are we going to have sharing space with how many bears, and how is that all going to shake out in a way that bears aren't at risk and people aren't at risk?
He says the concern is that polar bears could be driven from their den earlier than normal from all the racket, especially during the buildup phase. But Atwood says wildlife biologists aren't completely in the dark with how this could play out. The far north has experienced something like this before.
The Prudhoe Bay industrial footprint, I mean, they've been sharing space with polar bears for, you know, decades now.
Once the infrastructure is built, Atwood says there are ways to mitigate harm. Oil companies have to comply with federal guidelines and report polar bears denning nearby. Infrared technology has been used to make that detection easier. Last year, Hillcorp shut down a road for a few weeks as a mother bear emerged from a den with her cubs. But polar bears aren't the only iconic animal to use the National Wildlife Refuge. The porcupine caribou herd migrates through, and their calves are born in the refuge in the summer months. While oil production is still a ways off, Atwood says the more we can learn in the interim, the better.
My attitude is science can only help us in understanding what's likely to happen.
He says having an abundance of research is how you make management interventions if the time comes. Atwood is going into the field with his team this spring to study denning polar bears and cubs. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
Some of the oil industry's biggest supporters got a lot more than they asked for in the Trump administration's latest offshore drilling proposal. In early January, the Interior Department proposed opening up the vast majority of Alaska's offshore areas to oil leasing. Senator Lisa Murkowski, Governor Bill Walker, and others are asking Interior to scale back, limiting oil lease sales to the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas and Cook Inlet. Now, an advocacy group of Inupiat leadership organizations across the North Slope is also weighing in. Elizabeth Harbaugh from Alaska's Energy Desk has more.
To be clear, Voice of the Arctic Inupiat isn't against oil development. Last year, the group made a big push to allow drilling in part of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. When it comes to offshore oil development in the Arctic, Voice doesn't yet have an official position, but it does have a position on how Interior went about its latest proposal. In a recent letter to Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, Voice wrote, quote, "We feel the concerns of local organizations were ignored, and that deeply disturbs us," unquote. Arctic Slope Regional Corporation President Rex Rock Sr. is Voice of the Arctic's chairman.
We expressed our concerns, and we felt that we're being ignored, such as the Barrow and Kaktovik whaling areas.
Voice says the Kaktovik and Barrow whaling areas are critical to northern Alaska food security. They're used by local communities for whaling and other subsistence hunting. Interior's draft proposal would allow oil drilling in these waters, although the agency says excluding the areas may warrant further analysis. Rock says North Slope leaders had already made it clear to the federal government that those areas should stay off limits.
We had already worked this with the past administration and said, here are the areas that we ask that you stay away from. We've always said that for us, consultation is huge. You need to come in and talk to the people that are here.
Voice's letter concludes that Interior decisions affecting the North Slope must be based on consultation, coordination, and engagement with Alaska Natives. The Interior Department has not yet responded to a request for comment on the letter. However, Interior has stressed the plan is not final. It's still possible to remove many of the areas where offshore drilling is currently proposed. A public hearing on Interior's offshore drilling plan is set to take place in Anchorage on February 21st. For Alaska's Energy Desk, with help from Ravenna Koenig, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh.
The Alaska House passed a bill yesterday that would provide most of the funding for school budgets separately and earlier than the main state budget. It's intended to prevent widespread layoff notices to teachers that have been caused by the legislature passing budgets late the last 3 years. But the House rejected the part of the bill that would use state savings to fund it. It's not clear whether the Senate will pass the bill, and if it does, how it would propose to pay for it. Homer Representative Paul Seaton is a Republican who caucuses with a mostly Democratic majority. He notes that passing the bill without drawing from savings leaves it unfunded.
I think that every person on this floor has good intentions. However, in 2015, we had good intentions. In 2016, we had good intentions. And in 2017, we had good intentions. And in all of those years, we were sending out pink slips.
Anchorage Minority Caucus Republican Jennifer Johnson says the school money should come from the same account as the rest of the budget.
I would say it's the right move, the right time, and the wrong funding source.
The House and Senate majorities differ on the source of savings to be used to fund the full state budget. The mostly Democratic House majority wants to draw as much as possible from the Constitutional Budget Reserve, the same account that's covered spending gaps in other years. The Republican-led Senate majority wants to draw more from Alaska Permanent Fund earnings. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce says a bathroom bill would be bad for business.
We know that this ballot proposition, like it has done in the lower 48, isn't good for communities for various reasons.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Family Education Loan so parents, a spouse, or grandparents can help students with the cost of college or training programs in or outside of Alaska. Interest rates are lower than the Federal Plus, and no credit is required. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
Governor Bill Walker says more of the people making investment decisions for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation should work in Juneau. Walker spoke to the Juneau Chamber of Commerce at a luncheon today.
Why is Juneau not the Switzerland of Alaska from a financial standpoint as far as all the investment opportunities, as far as the money managers here?
Walker says more of the roughly $140 million the state spends for Wall Street fund management should be spent in state. He says the big Wall Street investment firms should have offices in Alaska, hiring Alaskans. Walker also updated the chamber on the state's plans for a natural gas pipeline. He says it was important for him to meet oil and gas company executives in Juneau. The Anchorage Chamber of Commerce says it opposes a controversial voter initiative that would regulate the use of public bathrooms in the city. Proposition 1 on the Anchorage municipal election ballot seeks to limit who can enter bathrooms and other spaces like locker rooms based on a person's biological sex at birth rather than their gender identity. Supporters say it would protect privacy and give businesses and churches the ability to regulate bathrooms in accordance with their beliefs. Opponents say the measure would discriminate against transgender residents. In a letter, the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce says the measure would be bad for business and says it would mark Anchorage as unwelcoming. Katie Ward is campaign manager for Fair Anchorage, a coalition advocating that residents vote no on the proposition. Ward says negative impacts to other cities and states that pass similar initiatives causing the cancellation of large revenue-generating events was likely on the minds of Anchorage Chamber of Commerce board members.
While they may have a more conservative reputation, I think that at the end of the day relates back to the economy. And we know that this ballot proposition, like it has done in the lower 48, isn't good for communities for various reasons.
The Anchorage Chamber passed a law in 2015 that prohibits discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. That pertains to housing, employment, and public facilities. Proposition 1 would amend the law in regards to so-called intimate spaces, including bathrooms. The Anchorage Chamber of Commerce represents 900-plus companies that employ more than 50,000 people. The election is April 3rd, but ballots for Anchorage's first-ever vote-by-mail are set to start going out in mid-March. A jury has convicted a Wasilla man in the fatal 2016 shooting of an Alaska State Trooper dog, the first ever to be killed in the line of duty here. canine Hilo, a Belgian Malinois, was chasing Armando Abarca after Abarca led troopers on a high-speed chase. Troopers say Abarca ditched his car near where the Parks and Glen highways meet and ran into a wooded area where he shot Hilo multiple times. Troopers returned fire and hit Abarca once. The jury on Wednesday found Abarca, now 27, guilty of killing a police dog as well as attempted murder, assault, and failure to stop at the direction of a police officer. Palmer Assistant District Attorney Sean Traney says the jury heard testimony from troopers Jared Knoll and Christopher Havens.
Trooper Knoll had to grab Hilo and race Hilo to the hospital as Hilo was dying in front of him. And when he testified before the jury, he certainly was very emotional. And Trooper Havens, who was Hilo's partner for several years, that was hard on him to have to relive what was a very scary and emotional night for him.
Traney says Abarca faces up to 4 years behind bars for shooting canine Hilo and up to 4 years for each assault and failure to stop conviction. He also faces between 5 and 99 years for the attempted murder conviction. Abarca's sentencing is set for May. After 2 years on the shelf, an Arctic deep draft port in Nome is back under consideration. KNOM's Zoe Gruskin has more.
The City of Nome and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers made a formal agreement last week. It clears the way for a study of the regional benefits of an expanded port in Nome. A deep draft port able to handle large ships would be the first of its kind in U.S. Arctic waters. According to Nome's Mayor Richard Benville, that's significant.
It's important. It makes sense. And Alaska needs it. The world needs it, but Alaska really needs it.
Benville's vision for a maritime Arctic starts in Nome, but would eventually see ports throughout the region. He says it will help diversify Alaska's economy beyond dependence on oil and gas extraction. And he sees it as a way to make the most of record low sea ice levels. It's a vision shared by Alaska's congressional delegation. One of the loudest voices in Washington calling for a Nome deep draft port is Senator Dan Sullivan.
There's challenges, of course, but there's also opportunities opening up in the Arctic as the sea lanes become more prominent and the shipping traffic increases. The way in which we can take advantage of them is to have more infrastructure to do that.
Last week's announcement starts an investigation by the Army Corps into the potential impacts of expanding Nome's port. That study could take up to 3 years and cost as much as $3 million, which the Army Corps and the City of Nome will split evenly. The city has already secured $1.6 million from the state for this purpose, and city officials hope the investigation could be completed in less time, thanks to existing research. The Army Corps singled out Nome as the best spot for an Arctic deep draft port in March of 2015.
And that is when Shell pulled out of the Chukchi and ceased operating in their oil and gas development. And the regional study was essentially paused.
That's Nome's port director, Joy Baker. She says with Shell out of the Arctic, the Army Corps felt they'd lost the economic justification for a port expansion. Instead of moving ahead with the Nome-specific study, the Corps put the project on hold for at least a year. But Baker says getting started again has taken longer than that.
We are basically reactivating after 2 years and 4 months. We are actually able to push forward now and pick up where we left off in October of 15.
Nome City officials worked closely with Alaska lawmakers to restart the project. Despite the halt in official action, Baker says these last 2 years and 4 months have been busy.
Meetings, trips to visit the delegation in D.C., letters, conferences, many, many teleconferences, you name it, we've done it.
The key, she says, was getting the Army Corps to understand that things work a little differently in a remote rural location. Baker says it's easier to justify the expense of an infrastructure project in a densely populated city in the lower 48. With the dimming prospects for oil and gas development, Baker says they had to make the case that expanding the port would do more than just boost Nome's economy.
This is part of my frustration because Nome plays an important role as a regional hub to many of the smaller communities throughout Western Alaska.
That's Senator Sullivan again. Baker gives Sullivan and the rest of Alaska's congressional delegation much of the credit for getting the deep draft port back on the table. Alaskan lawmakers pushed for changes to legislation that allows the Corps to consider benefits to the region as a whole and not just the city of Nome. They added language to a National Defense Act on the strategic importance of an Arctic port. Sullivan even put a hold on the nomination of an assistant secretary of the Army to press the issue. In December, the Corps issued a memorandum recommending they pick up where they left off and begin a feasibility study of expanding the Port of Nome. Port Director Baker is matter of fact when asked about the 2-year delay.
It happened, so now we're moving forward. I'd like to put the shovel in the water before I retire.
By her own rough calculation, that means Baker could be putting off retirement till at least 2023. City officials and representatives from the Army Corps will discuss the budget, schedule, and scope of the study at a planning meeting scheduled for late April in Nome. Reporting in Nome, I'm Zoe Gruskin.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities and in the 40 years of Alaska operations.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Would you like to play a part in the public media you enjoy? Consider becoming a member or corporate sponsor. Contact your public radio station to learn how.
Alan Moore remains the leader of the Yukon Quest by quite a margin. The 2-time past champion arrived at the race's halfway point in Dawson City, Yukon, last night, nearly 9 hours ahead of second-place musher Paige Drobny. KUAC's Zoe Rome talked to Moore after he pulled into Dawson.
Moore reported good trail conditions and is staying cautiously optimistic about his prominent lead.
Things keep going the way they are, I'll have a good chance. But there is 500 more miles to go, and anything can happen. I've been here first before and got beat by 26 seconds.
While Moore's attitude was positive, the temperatures in and around Dawson were anything but, with the mercury dipping as far as 40 below.
The cold's probably the worst thing this year. Over the summits, it was great. It was no wind, no snow, so that's uneventful, which is good.
Frosty, but in good spirits, Moore plans to eat and sleep as much as possible during his 36-hour layover in Dawson.
Eat a few pounds of food.
First musher to reach Dawson receives a poke of gold if they and their team can make it to the finish line in Whitehorse. Before that, Moore and his team are going to catch up on some much-needed rest.
Total, I've had 3 hours and 15 minutes since last Friday. It's going to feel better when I get into bed here in a little while.
On the Yukon Quest Trail in Dawson, I'm Zoe Rome.
Rounding out the top six behind Alan Moore and Paige Drobny are last year's Quest winner Matt Hall, veteran Ed Hopkins, top rookie Vaborn Rytan, and veteran Laura Neese. Quest mushers are required to rest their teams for 36 hours in Dawson. Studying high school science in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta comes with a whole new textbook. A textbook that's free, open source, available in print and digital formats, and customized geographically to rural southwestern Alaska. KYUK's Christine Trudeau reports educators and students alike are excited about the new texts.
Chifornik High School science teacher Teresa Shellhorn introduced the new biology textbooks to students this fall, and they love it.
From the very cover picture, the kids were interested.
They flipped it open and saw pictures of tundra berries that they recognized.
They flipped it over, they saw an albino moose, and they're like, oh my gosh, I've heard stories about this. And they started chatting with each other and talking to me about these things that were in this textbook. And I had never seen that before with any other, whether it be a biology textbook or a physical science, a math book, anything like that.
A couple of years ago, Shellhorn started working with Andrea Pokshevinsky and other Lower Kuskokwim School District science teachers on a review of the 9th through 12th grade textbooks.
We put together teams that represent the villages and the different grade levels and topics in a subject such as social studies or science.
They decided to go with the Silicon Valley-based CK-12 Foundation. Pokshevinsky is a distance education teacher based in Anchorage. She has used video conferencing to teach science courses online for the Lower Kuskokwim School District for the past 9 years. She has used CK-12 Foundation's online resources for years. The review team first began with the biology textbook.
And what I started to notice about the book was that it explained the content very well, being very concise and without being too wordy and weighted with a lot of academic language. It used very neutral, everyday experiences.
This past year, she helped make the push for all of LKSD's high school-level science courses to use CK-12's open-source textbooks, commonly known as Flexbooks. The teachers using the Flexbooks can print, on the district's dime, as many copies of the textbook as they need for their students, as well as update textbooks regularly, which Shellhorn feels is important.
To support something that we can constantly edit and re-edit and revise and make changes as necessary.
After a semester with the new localized CK-12 textbooks, ninth graders Matthew Eric and Clayton Penrick and 10th grader Dawson Eric are sold on it.
Because, like, we could connect to what it's saying.
The students say, along with the better sense of the delta the textbook gives them, they look forward to other parts of the textbook being translated, since they all grew up bilingual, speaking Yuktun first.
Like, if you don't understand the English word, like, if we could read the Yupik portion of it, like, we would understand
it in that English part of the text.
Do you guys think it would be easy or hard to translate some of this stuff into Yuktun?
Hard.
Probably be hard.
But worth it.
Mm-hmm. Pakshevinsky also says that in addition to helping the district include more culturally relevant examples in their curriculum, in the long run, it'll help more students relate their everyday experiences to the language of science.
Because there are so many climate deniers out there who don't see the accelerated erosion or the thawing permafrost or the changes in seasonal activities of animals. But our students are seeing that, and they have those observations. So I would hope that they could start to speak the scientific language of claims, evidence, and reasoning.
Beginning this summer, LKSD will start the process of translating their kindergarten through sixth grade science textbooks into Yuktun. These textbooks will be used in immersion schools and 17 bilingual schools throughout the district. In Bethel, I'm Christine Trudeau.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. You can find our stories on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Elizabeth Jenkins and Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Elizabeth Harbaugh and Casey Grove in Anchorage, Zoe Gruskin in Nome, Zoe Rome in Dawson, and Christine Trudeau in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.